Good evening. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Nom Watch Review, part of the Nom Talk Network. On this show, we review the latest film drop or a throwback celebrating a milestone while eating and drinking our favorite movie snacks and drinks. Don't forget that we have merch now. You can find our shop in the About section on Twitch or get the link by typing exclamation point merch in the chat. Note that subscribers to our Twitch channel get discounts. I am your host, Agent Carter, and right now I am enjoying. Well, I don't have a hand. My cat is sitting on me. I'm enjoying some peach cobbler and water. It's been a long day. It's been a long day. I can do this all day, but it's been a long day. And I am delighted to introduce our guests tonight. I've got Alejandro. Alex, what are you drinking today?
I have, let's see here. I got some soda from Raising Cane's, and I definitely got some snacks. So I decided to get some chicken tenders and fries. So I'll be, hopefully not doing some, loud crunchy noises of the mic, but I'm enthusiastic.
Awesome. I also have a Black Forest ham sandwich, which I will not be eating because of lipstick. So that will wait till later. Kyle, how are you doing tonight? What are you snacking on?
Well, I've got I made actually a Polish hot dog sandwich straight from Wiener Schnitzel, but for my snack, I've just got chips and salsa. But mostly since we're on the red carpet, mostly it's just water.
Nice. Well, it's hot on that red carpet. Got to stay hydrated.
You gotta not collapse. Exactly.
No, it's bad. Bad times. Bad times. And
Okay.
Mike, I like your sweatshirt. I like it. How are you this evening?
Doing good, doing good.
Great.
I could do this all day on your
Can.
left, and et cetera.
What are we snacking on?
I am just drinking a Coke Zero. I had dinner right before this, and a big breakfast this morning because I eat that sort of thing. But yeah, now I'm just letting the lines fly out, honestly, from the movie. Sorry, I'm obsessed with this movie, guys. I loved it so much. But anyways, yes, Coke Zero.
Awesome. All right. So before we lose direction, let's go ahead and remember, we are back to fundraising for the Trevor Project. We have a goal of $200. So if you have a little bit to spare and see, hit that link and drop a dollar or two for a really great cause for the Trevor Project. So on to today's show. We are talking about this little movie that they made in 2014 about this guy that you may have heard of, Captain America. Friend of mine, big fan. No, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Probably the best Marvel movie ever made. And I will fight you about that. I will fight you with this shield, with this compass, and with this half of the cosplay because you can only see half of me. So no, this is my all-time favorite Marvel movie. And if I am in a bad mood, my partner will put this movie on the TV and leave the room because he knows it will make my day better. Yeah, so I want to get started talking about this movie. I have been looking forward to this all day. I've had a bad day, and I literally, this was like my touch point today. Was like, all right, I got to get through my singing lesson and then come here and talk about this movie. We're gonna start with popcorn ratings. Mike, what'd you give this movie?
Don't crucify me. This is a 4.5 out of 5 for me. I love this movie with all my heart, honestly. I do. But if I was ranking MCU movies, this is number 4 for me because I just there's three others that I love even more so than this. Because they just basically bring comic books to life in ways that I've just never imagined would could be possible. And they're heavy hitters, you know. I mean, like it's Endgame, it's Avengers 1, and it's Civil War. Just because of everything that those movies do, they just make me smile so freaking wide. But Winter Soldier is and has always been up there for me because hands down the best action movie in the MCU, as far as choreography goes, all of it. We'll get into the specific reasons later on, but the only reason this isn't a 5 out of 5 for me is because my heart belongs to three other movies. But I love this movie so freaking much. I promise, guys. I swear to God, that's why I'm here.
Believe you. I'll allow it. Kyle, what's your rating for this movie?
So for me, there are two comic book movies that totally and utterly define modern comic book cinema. One of them is The Dark Knight, and this is the other one. I think the two of them are on par in terms of cinematography, on par in terms of how you blend comic book action and real world. There's obviously there's some upsides and downsides to doing that, but I think there's so many little details, like the inclusion of Robert Redford, the references to 1970 spy films, the fact that it literally launched the, I would argue, helped launch the television side of the MCU, at least in terms of Agents of Shield, which is how I got started on all of this. So it's a five. It's a five for me. I don't put it in a ranking, because I think that, there's just two that are up above, and I look at them in terms of, cinematography, and I look at them in terms because I believe in our product and the product we're trying to sell to audiences, and that's just, 5 out of 5.
All right. How about for you, Alex?
I'm going to put it a 4 out of 5, a little lower on the list over here with those guys. Realistically speaking, it's funny, it's 4 out of 5, but this happens to be my number one Marvel, despite going into the series of Moon Knight before. So it's a mixture of things. For me, it's because I'm a nerd of a lot of things. And, going into things such as talking about the Marvel Universe, there's so much that I understand and love, and yet there's a lot that I still need to catch up on. And I do understand it for the general concept, but this was like the introduction to everything for me. So, in regards to that, I'm a Winter Soldier fan. As much as I love Captain America, every single day, love the Howling Commandos, love it. The whole unit, the whole concept, the brotherhood amongst it. For me, it was also that I'm a huge fan of the Bourne series. I'm a huge fan of the 007 series. I'm a huge fan of Kyle mentioned Robert Redford going in with playing opposite of, I believe it was Brad Pitt for a while, and a couple of spy films back in the 90s too, as well that just makes a lot of references to. Realistically, it shows the dark side of government and the dark side of on the opposing side too, as well. You see that there's a lot of good in government, a lot of bad, and it's more along the lines of trying to find the happy medium of trying to understand who you're being approached to. And this film does a perfect example of that. And I think the best way to say this is it, and we'll talk about this a little later because I don't want to digress too much, but this is one of the only films in a very long time that I could sit down and I'm lost in. It's the universe, I'm there. It's fleshed out properly. You understand that there's a protagonist, antagonist, and all of a sudden you get blinded sides. Like, wait a minute, who? Wait, it almost flips. So there's so many beautiful moments in this that really make you think. So yeah, 4 to 5.
And I gave it a 5 out of 5. This is my favorite Marvel movie. It is my warm blanket on a cold day movie. I had a lot of trouble sitting through the first Captain America just because of the CGI of baby Steve, little Steve, really bothered me. Like, the proportions threw me off. So when this one came out, his proportions were much better, so to speak. And we'll talk about the helicopter scene later. At great length. No, I'm just kidding. Well, maybe. No, it's the spy movie thing. Like, I went through this phase in high school with spy books. Ken Follett. I read every Ken Follett book I could get my hands on. And this also has my favorite Easter egg of a Marvel movie that has absolutely nothing to do with Marvel. And it's probably not the one you're thinking of. It's just such a throwaway one that just hit me in the feels immediately. So, it's just one of those movies where if someone says, "Where do I start in the Marvel universe?" I don't really need to watch it in time order. I say you start with Winter Soldier because this movie, anyone can watch it and not know anything about the Marvel universe and can enjoy it if they don't really want to get heavily invested. And I don't, and then I'm not doing that. Okay, you need to start here and you need to watch them in this order. Just watch this movie, and if you like it, then I'm gonna go heavy on you, but just start here. So I'm gonna go to the chat real quick because Katie Tidwell, Miss Katie, subscribed. So thank you, Katie. Welcome. That is awesome. And she says, "What do you mean? His head perfectly fit his body." Don't lie. We've had this conversation a lot, Katie, a lot. And Q Ball says he gives it a 5 out of 5. I think it's better than the first Captain America movie. Oh, by far. Except not enough Peggy in the right situation. But we'll get to that later too. But no. The story was better. The action was more chaotic and insane fight scenes. Yes, absolutely. The acting was better between the characters and it was a little darker. Absolutely. All of those things true, 100%. So, this is the sequel, of course, to the first Captain America movie, directed by the Russo brothers, who I just love. They pulled so much of their personality into this movie from the cameos from Community and all the other stuff that was just like uniquely them, right? And they brought a lot to this movie. Came out March 26th, actually. I saw it in the theaters, which I did not see Captain America: The First Avenger in the theaters. So, you know, it was kind of a first for me as far as Captain America movies go. A great cast. You know, we got to see Sebastian Stan. We didn't know who he was at the time, with all that eyeliner. One of my favorites, Maria Hill, came back. Sharon. Anyway, no. And
Ouch.
yeah. No, it's just it like I said, just a great movie all the way around. Let me get down here to my notes here. So this starts, you know, a couple years after the Battle of New York. Steve is working as an agent with SHIELD. And you know, the famous "on your left" scene, that was actually my trivia team name when we used to do Trivia Weekly, was "on your left." And it's real funny, was someone thought it had to do with my political leanings. I'm like, no, you ding dong, it's just a line from Captain America. So you know, he's out there running. There's some fossil jokes, and we find out he has a list of all the things he needs to catch up on, and that list is different in every country where they show that movie, because I guess it just doesn't read well if you have to learn the same things. So we see Steve trying to like acclimate back into the world 70 years in the future. What was that like, and how did that, you know, resonate with you, Kyle? Seeing Steve, this man out of time, trying to get back into life and find his place in this world.
Comic books can go one of two ways. And I think that it's such a versatile medium. And you have to remember, these started as kids' books. But you want to tell an adult story. You want to tell a story that is genuinely upsetting. It's very easy to put something like, oh, he's been frozen for X amount of years, or he's been frozen for 60 years. He's in a block of ice. They unthaw him, and now everything, he's got to learn it. But taking the time to actually see the human impact of it just really, really hits you. And the fact that he's able to adjust to it, you can tell he's not adjusting well, but he's still able to adjust to it. And it really puts some it just makes you, it gives you the feelings, and it's just very well done story beat. And it makes you think, which is not something that you do when, I mean, we love the childhood comic books, we love the cartoons, sugary cereal, obviously. I mean, I have massive amounts of comic books when I'm not here on the red carpet. But the way that they, one of the things I really love about Winter Soldier is it was the integration between such very silly and strange concepts in the real world. And while that, like I said, while it has its good positives and its negatives, in this case, it was a big net positive, and it really made you think.
Absolutely. Mike, how about you?
Something that the MCU doesn't get credit for enough credit for really is character. And everything that they do with character, the subtleties that they do, especially with Steve Rogers, ever since even the first movie, has always been wonderful. And it, hands down, it, before of course, phase two started, really. The first Avenger, Captain America, the first Avenger was up there for me because for me, the ending to that movie is probably one of the most heartbreaking movie endings in the history of comic book movies. Just the single line, "I had a date," and him just realizing that his entire life passed by him is so tragic. It's gutting. And he doesn't have time to actually process any of this because he's thrusted immediately into the Chitauri battle with the Battle of New York with Loki. So to actually finally catch up with him about a year later, in Winter Soldier, you feel that impact, that leftover impact from the ending of that movie, and how Steve, in true Captain America fashion, as we will see later on as the MCU evolves, is trying his hardest to move on. Move on from everything that he left behind, trying to catch up, trying to understand the world that he saved. And you know what? That's the core of this movie. It sets up everything that we see in this movie because not only has the world changed in terms of technology and entertainment and food, but the world has changed in terms of black and white, good and evil, because it's no longer Nazis versus allies versus Axis. You know, it's no longer Nazis versus the US and the rest of the world. Good and evil, those lines have blurred. And we see that here very, very much. And the impact, as we see with Hydra and Shield later on, affecting all of this, there is no sense of like black and white, good and evil anymore. And that I think is something that this beginning, this intro perfectly sets up and kind of sets the ball up for them to inevitably spike it as the movie progresses in terms of how Steve evolves as a character by the end of this movie and then even later in the MCU. So I love this intro. I think it's brilliant. Everybody thinks that it's cutesy. Oh, you know, he's gonna watch Star Wars, he's gonna watch like, you know, he's gonna try Thai food, but it's more than that. And it's a lot richer and deeper than people give it credit for. And that's really what I loved about how this intro is set up.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the song, I feel like if they wanted to be cutesy, they would have given a different song recommendation than Trouble Man. You know, what do you think, Alex?
All right, so I had to unmute myself there.
That's okay.
Realistically speaking, it's a very common problem, and honestly, when it comes to the comic book world, is you get caught in between saying that comics were made for children. Realistically speaking, that is a load of shit, and
I agree.
it's crazy because you're looking at it, you see the political views. We go into the concepts of what Marvel has introduced things going into on its original introductions, anywhere from World War I, World War II, coming into things that even bring up things such as Vietnam. Now that being said, even getting nods to like the one thing I mentioned before, Watchmen. There always seems to be a habit of trying to find that happy medium of what's too realistic. Of what is, you don't want to offend anybody. And when I mean offend anybody, I'm talking, let's go back to the 90s, make a slight reference to Gargoyles, Batman the Animated Series. Those shows were on Disney, they were great, but there's two or three episodes that are now botched because there was a gun scene or it brought, violence or something that was, integrated. Fantastic stuff. It was great, but once again, it was all that borderline on being the nitty-gritty of life. And realistically speaking, when we're talking about superhero films, we're trying to get away from reality. Let's be real. It's great to have that. But the odd thing is, the more realistic you make a superhero film be, the better it is sometimes that it, in general. So like, for example, this one in particular hit me hard because when I was a kid, I was all about Sergeant Rock comics. I was all about reading Captain America. I was all about reading a lot of things that had reference to political views were going on around me because as a kid, I didn't like watching the news. I didn't know what was going on. So it helped seeing these things and seeing like slight stories that were skewed. Like, all right, cool. I understand what this is about. But they always showed how the soldiers felt at the time being, that the emotions that were behind them. Like Mike and Kyle said before, you have a huge thing in which you have a huge protagonist and a huge antagonist, and it's black and white. You know what's going on. But when this film comes out, it really brings out the raw edge that there's not exactly a clear line. There is sometimes it's like, okay, this was meant for great, but unfortunately, there's a little piece here that needs to be looked at. There's a little piece here that needs to be in checked. It's a constant thing where you realize as a society, we all have to put our part in regards, of watching things, watching for ourselves, watching out for others. And the movie does a really great, job of actually just showing the gritty things about it. And I just, once again, I think it does pretty decently.
Well, Steve learns that very quickly because he finishes his conversation with Sam and they're going to pick it back up later. And Natasha shows up in this really fast car and takes him on a mission. And they have to go to the Lemurian Star. And the first of the really notable fight scenes happens. And I can't really speak intelligently about it because I just start to drool a little. So, but it's Georges Batroc who, is played by, or it's, he's a real WWE fighter and he makes little snarky comments to Cap and then Steve like rips his helmet off and it's, yeah, fighting. But that's not the biggest enemy for Steve on that ship, he starts to lose trust in his people because he realizes he's not on the same mission as Matt. And I think it hurts him when he figures it out. You know, he's real bothered by that because I think for Steve, a big thing is trust, right? He has to trust his people. He's a soldier. You have to trust your crew. You have to trust your squad. And so, you know, the whole thing that goes down on the Lemurian Star really bothers him. And I think it sets us up more for what comes later in the movie too, with his reunion, with his childhood friend. So, you know, he has to kind of learn on the fly from Nat that not everything is black and white anymore, and not everybody has the same mission. And sometimes you still have to trust people even if you don't know exactly what their motives are. And oh, you know, it's a tough thing. And I mean, we all have to learn it. I mean, I know in my regular day-to-day job, you just can't trust anybody. You have to, you know. But it's a cool scene, you know, for the fight scene. It's always a great fight. It's not the best fight scene in the movie. We all know that's coming up. But you know, and we have already kind of talked about Steve's journey with that, you know, losing that kind of, you know, he was created literally like to punch Nazis, right? And now that's not what this world is anymore. So he goes back to headquarters, and Fury's got to show him something to kind of gain his trust back. Now, that is where the most gratuitous scene in this movie is, where he's standing in front of Fury's desk in his shield, in his stealth suit. And I think that might be why this movie comforts me so much, is that suit. I love that suit so much. Not just because he looks so good in it, but there's just something, so the suit calms me down, and I love the shield, like the blue and gray. The red, white, and blue is fine, but I just, the something about the stealth suit, it's so like low key, and I don't know. I don't know, something about the stealth suit, very calming for me. So he shows him Project Insight, these new helicarriers that they are going to launch. And they're going to connect with these satellites, and they're going to neutralize these hostile targets. This sounds like a great idea. Except there's one problem with how they pick these targets. It's not a very great idea. Not really great. So Steve needs to feel better about himself. So he goes to the Smithsonian to wallow in the Captain America exhibit. Because that's what I always do to feel better about myself. I go look at a giant exhibit that's all about me. But it's, you know, it's a cool scene because we get to learn a little bit about him, right? And listen to Gary Sinise's dulcet tones tell us all about Captain America. What I don't know why he goes there, but you know, we get to see Peggy, so of course it makes me happy. No, I actually start to cry when I hear the Smithsonian music, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
That immediately makes me cry because what comes after the Smithsonian? They really hammer home to Steve the you can't go back again message, because we see a video of Peggy in the 50s talking about how Steve saved the man who would become her husband. Which, if you really want to fast forward to Endgame, and the writers of Endgame have confirmed this, was Steve himself, because that was her husband. But people will argue that to the death. He goes to visit Peggy in a nursing home, and she is suffering from dementia. So she's having a conversation with him, and then in the middle, she sundowns and says, "Steve, you're here, you're alive." Sorry, that scene just gets me every time. And not just because, you know, my grandmother actually passed away, my great grandmother passed of the same thing. So, you know, that scene just always gets me. And the look on his face, Chris Evans. The scene he the way he acts that scene every time, I'm just like, damn it. And I think that's just he and Haley always had such a great chemistry, right? But I think that scene also really hammers home for Steve that you cannot go back, right? This is it. We are going forward. His past is over with. So Mike, talk us a little bit about then who we meet next. We meet Alexander Pierce, the World Security Council. So this is kind of that spy aspect of things. You have a lot of knowledge with the comics. How does that play in with like the comics? Is this a big diversion from the comics? Is it very similar to the comics, or did they really kind of veer out into more of a like spy aspect of it?
So yeah, actually, it's kind of interesting because the comics themselves, and the Winter Soldier storyline in general by Ed Brubaker, to kind of piggyback off of Alejandra's point, that comics at this point in time weren't for kids necessarily, especially this Winter Soldier story. In fact, when they announced, at Comic-Con that they were going to do Captain America: The Winter Soldier, automatically this was the most anticipated movie of Phase Two for me. And a friend of mine who didn't know the comics is like, why Captain America 2? The first one wasn't like my favorite, you know? And I was like, because the Winter Soldier is someone huge, guys. That's like a really big personal emotional story there. And he's like, who's the Winter Soldier? And I was like, oh, I'm not going to tell you until you watch the movie. But, the Bucky storyline and everything like that in the comics, it didn't play out exactly like this, as most things in the MCU. They don't always necessarily go by the specific storyline within the comics, but are merely inspired by it. Alexander Pierce doesn't factor into that storyline really. Bucky, we do find out Bucky gets brainwashed by Hydra and was frozen and everything like that, and comes back. And it is a big surprise. Sharon Carter does factor into it, and in fact, the Red Skull kind of brainwashes her at some point to kill Captain America. It's this whole thing. So the storyline here doesn't really feed into that, but the introduction of Alexander Pierce is wonderful for a couple of reasons. One, Robert Redford playing, the bad guy for once, always kind of playing the good guy usually in his movies, and then kind of ends up be it again feeds into that morally gray theme of this movie. I mean, the good who I think there's one line in this movie that really summarizes what this is about, and it's when Falcon asks Cap, how do we tell the good guys from the bad guys? And Cap has to say, if they're shooting at us, they're bad, and that's the thing. I mean, having a quintessential Hollywood good guy like Robert Redford playing Alexander Pierce, who's just pretty much a psychopath in this, but a psychopath with power and a calculating one at that, is quite brilliant. But it also gives us as fans of the MCU a little bit of insight, no pun intended, into the inner workings of SHIELD. Who's the man behind Nick Fury? Who, when we saw that council at the end of Avengers deciding to nuke like New York, who are those people on the screens? And we get an answer to that here. And we get an answer to that, and I think that that was actually a really cool moment, the reveal of Alexander Pierce. And what he does and how he and Nick Fury kind of interact. But it also this entire scene seeds sows the seeds of mistrust in Fury, which I really kind of liked as well. I mean, because Fury finds out his security clearance has been revoked, in trying to look into a series of files, on the Lumerian Star. And yeah, he ends up going like, what the hell is going on here? So he starts questioning who can he trust before he finds out like the devastating truth. So it's a very important introduction. It's a very important scene, both on the multiple levels of you figuring out how the MCU kind of works and being introduced to this version of the story, the Winter Soldier story, versus the comics, and also carrying on the individual narrative of Fury, the Lumerian Star, the conspiracy behind all of it. So it's really well done. Yeah.
Awesome.
I have no idea if that answered your question, by the way,
No,
but
it
whatever.
did. It did. It did, because you touched on the comics at the beginning and then how it diverged. So yeah. And I mean, obviously, Alexander and Fury, they long history. They have a long history. So that definitely cuts deep for Fury when he realizes that Pierce isn't on his side like he thought he was. So for sure. There's a lot. That's a running theme through this movie for sure. The next scene is also probably one of my favorites. I just like the action in this movie. There's a lot of action in it, and I like that when I'm having a bad day. I'm gonna watch it again when we're done here. So, Kyle, the next scene is our first glimpse at our friend, the titular Winter Soldier. He puts a little roadblock in front of our friend Nick Fury here. What do you think of his introduction? Was it grand enough?
So the introduction that they call in history, they have the face that launched 1,000 ships with Cassandra of Troy, or with Helen of Troy, and in this case we have the murder strut that launched 1,000 memes. And for someone who grew up during that time period, everything about that scene was gift, and it was the birth of Tumblr. So every 5 minutes, you would see pieces of that particular scene coming across your dashboard. So you grew up, or at least you became more self-aware and conscious with that whole introduction and everything, and it just kind of defined you. I loved how he was introduced. I love how you don't really see it, just that hand goes out and catches the shield. It's absolutely dynamic. It's fantastic. Like I said, I support our product.
I like the sarcastic SUV that Fury's in. The air conditioner works. I'm sure that's what he wants to hear. How did this satisfy you, Alejandro, with Bucky's introduction, with the whole scene where all of DC seems to be turning against Nick Fury, and then let's throw a grenade under his car too, you know?
Right now for me, I was hyped. I've been always like I mentioned before, I've been a big Spy fan. To me, there's something about, like, for example, a character that, I think that's pretty great in the, in the Marvel series. Once again, is not only looking at Black Widow, but we're also looking at Hawkeye, because they're very, very vulnerable. It's very, very, they can die. And not to saying that the other superheroes can't, but I think that in this movie, it reflects the exact same thing. You got Fury in that scene, like, at the time being, for example, 2014 was a great year for me. I sold cars that time being. So all these people were coming in wanting to get different things, but to see a car take that much damage, and to know you can hop in the passenger seat and pull out something that was equivalent to, like, an M240 machine gun and just duke it out, and somehow have an auto driving machine coming on, I was impressed. I was just drooling over that whole dang thing. I was like, no one's ever gonna able to be robbed me again if I had something like that. Okay, that's overkill. I'm kidding. I wouldn't say, do that to people, but regardless, that was just not only anti-theft, that was like anti, SWAT, anti-terror. It was just ridiculous. Now, also, I thought it made sense because you have somebody that is as powerful as the Winter Soldier, as powerful as Captain America, as powerful as all of these aliens. A Glock and, a Beretta with two shots to the chest, they might sneeze at and laugh. So you're going to need something that kind of heavy. So it felt like it was showing that they were understanding as a nation that what they need to do. When I say nation, it's more along this private organization that is trying to defend a nation, so to speak. But it was still a very, very gray black line when it came for it. But I fanboyed so much over seeing Bucky come out. I'm gonna admit, I'm getting teared right now. I cried like a little, ah, oh, I cried so much in the very first Winter Soldier when I thought he died. I was familiar with comics, but not everything. Like, so I'm a nerd of everything, but, like, not as much. So I thought they killed off, like, Steve's homeboy. I was like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, my girl, are you okay? I'm like, oh, okay, just killed. It was just really rough. So seeing, like, Bucky grab that, there was, you saw his eyes. You know who that was. You knew who that was. Like, I mean, when that happened, man, I still get little chills on my damn arm. I like, that was a big, big thing for me. Also, because even though you have this person that is just as dangerous and as, like, just powerful, he represented a little bit more of the, I would say, the modern dark superhero, because I was a big Crow fan. I'm a big anti-hero. So for me, it seemed like there was something that he was a bad guy, but there was an essence of it. Yes, I knew that Bucky, but I didn't understand the whole brainwash thing. I still wasn't, I was starting to get used to it. I was still being a, brand new person to the Marvel universe, being introduced, visually to stuff that I was only remotely familiar with, a little Spider-Man comics and a little bit of things here and there. So to see something that's gritty and relatable, I was like, this is just fantastic. And it also made me sad because we mentioned in the beginning, that Steve and, Mike is hammered on this so well, is that he had, like, a note of things to do in life. He had a thing that he wanted to enjoy his life, and he wants to do all these things. He wants to just get over it. And now that he's fighting people that he knows, now he has people that he has called comrades, and he's duking it out with. And not only is he duking out with the people that he considered comrades, this guy that he just got, just had a really bad feeling right now. It's just starting to set up a whole bunch of dread, in my opinion, because I see it, it's like, oh my God, this is being so cool. At the same time, like, oh wait a minute, that's Steve's homeboy. Oh shit. So I mean, honestly, I thought they did a pretty good well with it. Kyle hit it on the head. The amount of memes coming out. My brother graduated in 2014. I am 37 to date myself a little bit on this, but oh my freaking God. The whole when you walk into the lunchroom or when your girl steals your hoodie or when you like, there's so many things that came in where that flowing freaking mane that came out in that mask just perfect some kind of essence of just meme worthy, you know? So as you can tell, I kind of got a little try to copy off on occasion. But honestly, like I said, I thought they did a great job in it. I thought they'd not only did a great job of making such like an anti-hero of the time coming out, but making him very questionable. You know, you got somebody we all have a like, we all fall in love with him. There's a little mystery to him. He's not just a bad guy. We see him doing bad things, but we're like, what the hell? Wait, what's going on? So,
So funny story. When I saw it the first time in the theater, there were a lot of people who had no idea that that was Bucky until the reveal of the face mask. And when the mask came off, like people in the theater audibly were like this. And I was like,
was the rule though, because I was always told, because every when you have any remotest connection to comics, even if it's just DC, you're always told there's two people that will never come back: Uncle Ben Parker and Bucky Barnes. And then lo and behold, Bucky returns, and I'm like, are we gonna get evil Adam Scott now somewhere in the MCU? Because oh my God, please.
That would be fun.
That would be
that would make Madam Web 2 tolerable. No, I can't believe I just said that sentence.
No one's asking for
No one's
that.
asking for that. If anyone heard that, no one's asking for that. So Fury's magical anesthetic dispensing car is now out of order, and so is he. Steve goes back to his apartment, and all of a sudden his neighbor is wielding a gun and being very badass. I'll give her that. Anyway, no. So she tells him his stereo's on, and this makes him a little suspicious. He sneaks in through the window of his own apartment. And by the way, his stereo is playing a certain song. His stereo is playing "It's Been a Long, Long Time, I'll Have You Know." So now that makes me cry in this damn movie too. Make of that what you will. I think it's just a song that means a lot to him. But anyway, who knows if it means anything. So Fury is in his apartment, very injured, and they're having a conversation, but Fury is also giving him messages, typing in his phone to show him, because he believes Steve's apartment may be bugged, shield is compromised, they can't trust anybody. I'm sure this helps Steve feel real good about everything right now. Fury gives him a USB drive and tells him, "You can't trust anybody." And then he goes unconscious. Steve's little tiny neighbor busts down the door and says, "I'm an agent and I'm supposed to keep an eye on you." He says, "Who told you to do that?" He did. And she points to Fury, who is unconscious on the floor. There's a masked man shooting at him through the window. He goes after him. He's got his shield. He's in pursuit. There's this great scene where he throws the shield at who we now suspect is Bucky, but we don't know. He catches it with his arm, throws it back at him, jumps off the building, and is gone. So now Fury's in critical condition. They go to the hospital. We are all sad because, oh no, Fury dies. Maria's really sad. Nat's really sad. We go and we see Pierce again. It just keeps going. Okay, that's none of that's important, because what's really important is the elevator scene. That's what matters here. That's what matters to me. Probably one of the best lines in the movie to me too is Steve's in this elevator, and he's pretty in tune with things with that super soldier serum, and he's looking at all these guys. Rumbelow's in there, Jasper's in there, that little weasel. And all these other strike guys are in there, and one of the guys is like sweating. He's got a baton. Like, he just knows something's up. Something's not good right now. Before we get started, does anybody want to get off? And then one of the best fight scenes in all of Marvel takes place. And if you haven't seen it, look up the video of Chris Evans rehearsing this scene. It is fantastic. He rehearses it by himself, like, and he's just doing all the moves. It's great to watch. Why I would look that up, just for, education's sake. It's very interesting to learn about stunt work. Yes. So now Steve really doesn't feel like there's anyone he can trust, but he decimates every single man in that elevator, and it is fantastic. Watch it on slow motion. It's really cool. So he's really at a loss, right? Because where does he go now? What does he do? Who can he trust? We go to we see hold on, I lost my place. Don't get old, guys. Your eyes go and you lose your place when the words are white on a black background. It's terrible. Okay, he kicks everybody's ass in the elevator, gets out of the elevator. And I like the way they simplify this. He knocks everyone out and gets out of the elevator. No, he jumps out of the elevator like a little turtle with his shield and falls all these stories to the ground and then just bounces. It's this poor guy, he's been through so much, and now he's got to get on his damn motorcycle and go through these backwards things, and there's a Quinjet chasing him. Like, can he get a break? Can this man just like have 5 minutes where he can have a nice glass of milk and some cookies and just enjoy 2014? Or it's probably 2016 for them, right? Because they're a couple years ahead of us. But you know, he still doesn't e we haven't even gotten to the part where he knows that his childhood friend is still alive and trying to kill him. Like, that's the travesty of all this. So he manages to take out a Quinjet while riding his motorcycle. I just he's amazing. He's a fugitive. He needs to be taken out by SHIELD. All the SHIELD agents are told, take him out. He's withholding information on Fury's death. He killed him. We see Pierce at his house talking to this masked man at his kitchen table, and his poor house cleaner Renata comes back and has the bad misfortune to come back to get her phone. And he turns around and he kills her because she saw too much. She saw nothing, by the way. She saw absolutely nothing except a guy at his kitchen table. But here is my favorite Easter egg. When Pierce opens up his fridge, front and center, there is a bottle of Newman's Own salad dressing as a homage to Paul Newman and all the movies that Paul Newman and Robert Redford did together, and to their friendship. And it was on purpose, and it is my favorite Easter egg in this whole movie because I just thought it was such a cool little touch that they did to honor Paul Newman and the friendship that he and Robert Redford had. So just real quick, we'll take a little pause here because I know one of the best Easter eggs also is late in the movie. But what were some of your favorite callbacks and like little Easter eggs and touches that they did in this movie? Alex, we'll start with you.
Sorry, trying to unmute myself here. Realistically speaking, a lot of my stuff is, like I said, my history with Marvel and the comics is not as I would say diverse or deep as others. So for me, a lot of the stuff was references to actual films that mess around with Marvel. So for example, going to spy games, we're looking at certain areas that Robert Redford came into, being making references, his questions, his personality in general, just the fact that how deadpan he would, and especially during, because I'm so used to actually seeing him as a good guy, being on that, analytical, very, very okay, cool. He is the last person's hope. He is not going to freak out in something that, we're about to get nuked. He's the guy to help. So to see him come around just from the scene you just mentioned, and the, off is made, that was deep to me. I was like, you got to be kidding me. That hurt. So, having that to see what was going in regards to that, you have things such as Bourne Identity references coming into, especially when they're looking for Steve in general, especially to the whole operation of finding him. Steve talking to him, the actual going back into the actual mic conversation he's having with his pursuers. That whole concept was, a nod to, Jason Bourne, why he's getting pursued by his own agency. You're looking at the concept of him chasing his friend, chasing Bucky through there as well. Once again, another Bourne Identity, or we can go into, a classic 007 versus 006 reference going into from, going into, 007 days. So the reason why I fell in love with this movie so much was, as much as a nerd I was, about other films, this is what they were nodding to, and it was making me want to learn more about the Marvel Universe. So mainly for me, being somebody new at the time, being introduced to it, it was because of them being able to do enough, I would say, pop nostalgic references in regards to spy game movies to me to actually get invested more into the universe. So yeah.
Awesome. Kyle, how about for you?
Okay, so I could say everything that Alex said about connections to spy movies, because I believe the movie that they most referenced was something called like Iron Eagle, I want to say, or not Iron Eagle. It's Iron Eagle with Robert Redford was in it, where he was basically playing like a Steve Rogers type role. The thing that the Easter egg that is completely random that no one knows or connects to but me is a series of complete and total coincidences that follow the plot of this film that actually have to do with Disney. So you have Mickey Mouse, who is the iconic character, who is, if you will, the Captain America of this scenario. And then you have Oswald the Rabbit, who was with another studio for 70 years and then ended up coming back and being having to battle Mickey Mouse in Epic Mickey. So the two of them, it's a completely random string of coincidences. But whenever I think of weird Easter eggs, my mind always is drawn back to the fact that Mickey Mouse's brother, his best friend, ended up coming back from a rival studio 70 after being gone for 70 years exactly. And they ended up squaring off and they ended up fighting. And that to me is the completest, most random Easter egg. That's not even really an Easter egg. It's just something that I alone apparently connect, because you get, Mickey Mouse going, "Gosh, Oswald, I thought we were friends. We were brothers. We were friends. You're not my friend. You're my mission." Blah. And the amount of merchandise that was missed out. We got to get on that, because that would have been great. But that's my little connective tissue weirdness that comes from this movie.
I want to see Bucky with big long ears now. How about for you, Mike?
Yeah, so one of my favorite Easter egg, honestly, Katie, in the chat kind of took the words out of my mouth. It was the first mention of Doctor Strange, Stephen Strange, as one of the targets of Project Insight, so that I loved. The Arnim Zola and his form in this, I do like the Easter egg there, because if you think about how Arnim Zola looks in the comics, it's kind of like a robot with a screen for a face and its glasses and everything like that. When they go into Camp Lehi and go into the bunker, and you see him on the screen, it's like a digitized face, and that's really an homage to the way that he looks in the comics, which I thought was kind of cool. The screen. There's also, of course, the obvious War Games reference. I thought that that was a really nice gag from Nat. There that these are things that I really loved. And then just thinking about like Batroc the Leaper's costume, it's like this purple and yellow kind of spin on his really ugly. In the comics, it's a D grade character. He sucks so much. Nobody gives a crap about Batroc the Leaper. But here, what is his name? Jorge, whatever the MMA fighter's name is. Is wearing a suit that kind of calls back to that original costume, regardless of how ridiculous it is. So those are things that were really cool. I think Rum, there's stuff in this movie that I think counts as an Easter egg that ends up paying off later on. Certainly, when Arnim Zola is talking about the history of Hydra, we do see the newspaper clipping of the death of Tony and Maria Stark at the hands of
Howard.
Hydra. And that and how sorry Howard and Maria Stark, sorry,
I was
yes,
like,
and that ends up becoming a big plot point, obviously, in the next Captain America movie. So that's really big. And yeah, I mean, like, to me, there's just a wealth of really great payoffs that happen after they're being set up here in this movie, that you wouldn't necessarily know were actual things that were being used to set up later future installments. So I don't know,
Remember
I
it's all
really love that.
connected? Remember the hashtag it's all connected? Remember how that was all over social media? Hashtag it's all connected.
It was definitely one of those taglines to try and get you to watch Agents of Shield. But
Shut up. It was a good show. So
it did play into Shield in a really nice way,
they
especially
did.
since Sitwell was in Shield for the first, couple of episodes of that season. You think that he's an ally, and then everything shifts, and it really affects that show, and basically turns that show up to 11. So, yeah, God, I just love this movie. So
We're
good.
gonna have to fast forward a bit here because we haven't even had Steven meet Bucky yet. So yeah, so they get blown up at Camp Lehigh. Yeah, guys, I can literally talk about this movie all day. We see rest his soul. God, what's his name? I can't even think of the comedian's name. Ah, the one who says Steven's name. Gary Shandling. He's Hydra, which I could have guessed. I could have guessed from watching his show. So we finally come to the fight, and there's this guy. He attacks the car that Nat and Sam and Steve are riding in. There's this whole amazing fight scene, and Nat finally tricks him with a phone, and they escape, but not before the guy gets his mask off and Steve sees him and says, "Bucky," and we get the line from him where he says, "Who the hell is Bucky?" By the way, I just got a new car this weekend and I named it the Winter Soldier, and I call it Bucky. So you know, there's that. I talk to it and I ask it who the hell is Bucky, but it doesn't talk back to me. So they, you know, Steve is devastated because here's his friend, he doesn't know who he is. He has been brainwashed by Hydra. And when he is being rebrainwashed by Hydra, by the way, that is actually one of the comic book writers. And you said his name earlier, Mike, and I forgot what his
Rick
name is.
Remender.
And Brubaker, I
Oh, is it
think.
Brubaker? Okay, I
I
thought
think it's
Brubaker.
Brubaker. Yeah.
It is Brubaker. Yeah. So Maria gets Steve and Sam and Nat and takes them to a secret hideaway to let them know that Fury is not dead. He is actually alive. He tricked them because you can't trust anyone in this. Steve needs a suit, so he steals it from the Smithsonian and gets poor Stanley fired. Oh, we're going to talk a little bit about this because Eric has come in and joined us and redeemed You're So Punny for Kyle. Kyle, let's talk about poor Bucky being rebrainwashed, and they have to go and take back Shield.
Well, I guess you could say that they needed a little bit of cover in order to take back Shield.
Shield cover. Got it.
Shield
Yes.
cover.
Very good.
Nice.
Very, very good. I was going to actually take it one step further and just hand you the part about Nick Fury and his eye, and you have to keep both eyes. He had the line. I was going to feed it to you, but you're good. You got this.
It's it's what we do here. No,
Yes, it is. It is.
I think that the okay, if I go back to what I believe is important, I was always, once again, going back to the whole scope of comic book film. There's all the stuff that DC has done, and DC is Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman. Those three are the golden gooses. What are the golden geese for Marvel? The X-Men and Spider-Man. Now, when Marvel first came to Disney, there was no X-Men, there was no Spider-Man. There was just the list of characters that you would know if you were vaguely familiar with the comics, but you didn't have the same broad appeal as Superman or Batman. Those were names that were, you know, iconic. So when you had to set up Shield, you had to set it up as something very detailed because I knew what Shield was because I had read some of the comics. So at the end of the first Iron Man, when Clark Gregg was like, you know, just call us Shield, I was like, oh, they said a thing. I know the thing, but no one else would have known who they were. So you, the way that they said, the way that this movie was set up, where you had this entire you basically set up this massive, very complicated entity. It's beautifully written, beautifully done, and you had all of these people, you know, assemble, if you will, to take down an entity that was connected, because it's all connected to a larger, you know, almost cinematic universe, if you will. And they, you know, and that's that you they did a beautiful job of setting Shield up as that level of enemy entity. I just gave you like five hits and they just went.
I had to mute myself because of the chuckling. I was just gonna say,
Well
Sorry,
done.
I was reading ahead so we could like get going here. So we're taking big jumps here. Bucky's back, he's rebrainwashed. They go and they take back Shield, and that's a pretty tense scene in the control room. Lots of guns. Sharon's not gonna take any more crap from these guys. Steve is in this really old looking suit, poor guy. they get to the helicopters, helicarriers, to the InSight thing, so they can put these special chips in to stop these attacks. We are not going to be killing people before. We're not doing though. What's that Tom Cruise movie that where they Minority Report
Minority
people
Report, yep.
out of existence? No 13-year-old prodigies being taken out before they can become geniuses. Pierce is taking out the council with their badges and just putting holes in their chest. That's when Nick Fury does the "You got to keep both eyes open." We can't make fun of his one-eyedness because he makes fun of it himself. So it's fair game. And then as Steve is about to put that final chip in and turn off the final helicarrier and disengage the weapons, Bucky comes in and there's this crazy fight high above the river. And he's like, "I'm your friend, I'm your friend." And he's like, "I don't know you." And it's this horrible, sad scene. And they fight, and Steve wants to give in because that's his friend. And then they fall to the river. But Bucky pulls him out of the water because he's a good guy and he knows somewhere deep inside of him that that's his friend. But then he leaves him there. Rumlow's gone. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Yeah.
Bye bye, Rumlow, for now. Nobody's ever really gone. And then Steve wakes up in the hospital with Sam on his left playing the Trouble Man soundtrack for him, which is very sweet of him. And now we can see now people are starting, Shield is compromised and we're going to have to start splitting up. Bucky, I'm your father. Aw. Thank you, Eric. So no, he never had the arm to begin with. They took it a long time ago. Nick Fury is officially considered dead, so he goes and he burns up his storage unit, and we see Steve and Natasha and Nick at his gravesite, where the other great Easter egg is, which is Sam Jackson's line from Pulp Fiction, which I can't quote because I've never actually watched Pulp Fiction all the way through. It's too violent for me because I'm a wuss, but I do recognize the line, and I thought that was a great
Feed me the first few letters or first few words.
I don't know them. I
The
just know
path
it's a
of the
place.
righteous man
Righteous.
is
Oh yeah.
beset
Oh,
by the.
okay.
Yeah, it's the Ezekiel verse. So,
Say what again, metal.
they dropped a link to the merch in the chat if you're interested, guys. So there is a link to the merch in the chat.
Not gonna
Merch,
lie, I
merch,
thought you were
merch,
gonna
merch,
say,
merch, merch,
"Hand me
merch,
my
merch.
lightsaber."
No,
Hand me my lightsaber. It's the
they
one
did
that
not
says
put that.
"Hand of the
Hand me my
Yes.
lightsaber. Best line in Pulp Fiction. Yes.
Yes.
Right before he powdered his ham with baby powder.
Dang, I need to watch Pulp Fiction, guys. No, just kidding. So then, Nat's got to go into the congressional hearing, and basically everybody's kind of going their separate ways, but Nat pulls a few favors and gets Steve Bucky's file. And then at the end of it all, we are seeing we see Bucky, and he is in Steve's display at the Smithsonian, looking around and reading and learning about him. So it all kind of comes full circle, and this is before he gets out of here and goes to just wanting to have some plums in a foreign country, where we will catch up with him. But this is still my favorite movie. And guys, I want to hear your final thoughts. Alejandro, wrap it up for me. Let me hear about it.
honestly, I mean, as much as I love this film, I love it a lot, but I love it a lot more because it makes me sad. There's a lot of things that hit hard because you see this, and just for example, the museum scene, you said anything, when you feel bad, when I feel bad, I go nostalgic. I'm looking on pages, the things that used to make me feel good. I mean, looking on things that used to, like, okay, cool, this is the crew I used to run with, and stuff of that nature. So when you see that kind of thing, just a little resemblance in the film of him getting used to what once was and what he has to actually, move forward and how to actually progress with the times. And in reality, you also see the curse of, like, a soldier following orders and understanding they're human beings and understanding that they have their own lives. And now, in the end of the day, as much of he as much as we put him on a pedestal, he still has the human weakness. He still wants to be loved. He still wants to have a home. He still wants to have all these things. And all these things are become questionable and consistently questionable within this movie and later on. So Realistically, I think this film does excellent of showing the nitty-gritty life. Kyle, Mike, and Jen, you also mentioned the fact that there's references of Dark Knight just because of just the grunginess of it. So to see, it still was able to, show hints of that and was still able to be a great superhero movie. But I believe, like I said, it seemed to be very realistic. There was a lot of things that I could actually, once I relate to in general. But yeah, I like I said, it I once again, I'm a little sucker for it because the Winter Soldier is my guy. Any anti-hero becomes a hero is my thing. So that was fantastic. I'm a sucker for a mask. That's what it is, man. That's the mask right there. It's gun. Mask, I'm like, oh, I'll be your fan forever. So, but once again, I thought it was really great how it was really nitty gritty because once again, when you think of a superhero film, everybody or superhero mentioned before, Superman. I mean, that was it. That's just being the most popular superhero in the world. But it's so, Clark Kent. It's so, if something was wrong, he'd save the day. Everything was clear as day of who the bad guys were. And now we are in a world that that I think that we can relate to in our modern day life that ultimately, we want good, but there's little assholes in between that, are just really good with just, manipulating things here and there. So ultimately, I think it was it, ultimately, I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. How about for you, Kyle?
I was just looking up and I completely forgot. I have a framed photo that's signed by Anthony and Joe Russo that I got when they were first promoting the film and doing their promo tour at Amoeba Records in Southern California. And that to me just kind of it this movie goes much bigger beyond this movie goes much bigger beyond the film for me. It's such a part of who I am, and it's connected me with so many wonderful people. So it goes beyond the story in terms of things that I've gotten to do because of it and stuff that's happened. It even goes beyond my lack of Mickey Mouse's Captain America and Oswald as Bucky Barnes merchandise, which is a serious problem for me. We'll get on that. But in terms of filmmaking, it to me is one of the top five comic book films that exist, and it's because it completely redefined the idea of the genre as it completely redefined the idea of the genre for Marvel the same way that The Dark Knight did for DC. And it was just it's just a good movie. It's a solid, sad movie that could arguably both be an Oscar contender and a blockbuster film. Who wouldn't want that opportunity?
Mike?
Well said, Kyle. So 3 points. One, Kyle, I was there with you at Amoeba, but I didn't know you then, so that's kind of cool. I was there that day. Two, I know we breezed through it, but for my money, there is no greater action scene in comic book movie history than the freeway chase scene and the subsequent fight scene between Bucky and Steve Rogers. Just the hand-to-hand combat, everything that Nat does. It's literally the most intense and the most tense scene, action scene ever. And it's one of those scenes where you actually don't know if the hero is going to make it or not. And that never happens in comic book movies. Everything that happens there leading into the reveal of Bucky, it's all emotionally driven. It's well done. The stakes are real. The stakes are high. I don't think that Marvel has ever gotten as good as that in terms of action. Now, granted, amazing action scenes in several movies thereafter. Don't get me wrong. The Shang-Chi bus scene is up there. It's so freaking good. But this scene is just a masterwork of stunt work and choreography and tension and mood and emotion. And I don't think that it ever gets any better than this, even in the MCU or any comic book movies that I've ever seen. I've yet to see anything to top this. And third, I really love the fact that you start this movie out with Cap in the stealth outfit because the stealth outfit means that he's kind of conflicted. He's in the shadows. He doesn't know what he's doing, what he's fighting for anymore. He even has that conversation with Peggy later on. But then we end the movie with him in his traditional uniform because at that point he knows who he is. He knows what he's fighting for, and he definitively knows what is right and wrong. That is the essence of who Captain America is, and something that defines Steve Rogers for the remainder of the MCU and the Infinity Saga. Him having that crisis of identity and a crisis of faith and that crisis of understanding in morality. It's resolved by the end of this movie, and the Steve that we see from Civil War, from Age of Ultron to Civil War to Endgame on, that's Steve fully having full conviction about what he knows he's fighting for, and what he knows is fight what he is fighting for is the right thing to fight for, you know. And that is Captain America in a nutshell, which is why this movie is so wonderful. Works brilliantly as an MCU movie, but even greater as a Captain America movie. I will shut up now. Sorry.
Yeah,
But yeah.
no, you guys, I couldn't have said it better myself. So that is all the time we have to talk about Captain America Winter Soldier, though we probably could have gone on for another 2 hours. So I want to shout out to my amazing guest who made this conversation so rich and wonderful. And yeah, I couldn't have done this without them for sure. So Alejandro, where can the people find you?
If you can't find me here rambling about all sorts of movies, you can find me on social medias, Instagram, IAMCOWIE. That's I am Cowie. Alejandro Cowie on TikTok. I deleted the Twitter, so it doesn't matter. But hey, Facebook, you can come to my rambles too if you're old enough to be there. I know that's becoming less hip. I said hip, don't judge. But regardless, I am Cowie. Please follow me or find me here.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle.
So you can find me on TikTok at Caroline, Caroling underscore cosplay. You can find me on everything else in some variation of either Caroline, Caroling fandom on Instagram, or Carolyn or Kyle, Kyle Podig, Poddig on Blue Sky, and Caroline Arts on Threads. Basically, any variation of Caroline Arts or Kyle Arts. Those are the two that you're looking for me.
All right, thank you. And Mike.
You could find me on your left. No, I'm kidding. At TidyBullBoy182 on Twitter and Instagram. But my work is on the nerdsofcolor.org, whattowatch.com, and that's at LA.
You can find me waiting in a little house playing. It's been a long time for my soldier to come home. No. You can find me on Instagram. Do underscore as underscore Peggy says, and letterboxed Peggy says, just at Peggy says on Letterboxd, where I am reviewing movies as I watch them and crime documentaries, which those are grim. Don't watch those. They're terrible recommendations. But yes, this has been a great conversation, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Join us Wednesday when they will be reviewing Imaginary, which looks terrifying. So I will be hiding behind a blanket. Thank you so much, you guys. Until then, I am Jennifer, and you have a nomorific day.
Deadpool, July this year, Deadpool.